Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pop Health Podcast. My name is Zach Morgan, co-host of Pop Health Podcast. Once again, flying solo today as Gavin could not be with us. But I'm very excited to welcome our guest today, Tori Starr. Tori, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Pleasure to be here.
So Tori is the Vice President of Care Management for the Valley Area for Sutter Health, which is a large hospital healthcare organization. Again, Tori's based in the Sacramento area in Northern California. And we actually met because I moderated a panel that that Tori was on. And when he and I were speaking and when he was speaking at the conference, the things that he had to say about the way that the healthcare industry is going and the innovative things that they were trying really stuck out to me. And so that's why I'm very thankful that you agreed to come and talk to us. So again, welcome. And let's go ahead and jump in. Do you mind telling the audience first, what's your clinical background? How did you get to, you know, to be the vice president of care management?
So my background is I'm a nurse by trade.
Okay.
And have been for almost four decades now. And I have spent, been fortunate to have a wide variety of experiences in my career. So I had the good fortune of spending a significant amount of time. Actually, I began my career in the ambulatory setting once I did my initial clinical training. So I have had the experience of being able to work in home health,
sure,
in hospice, adult day health, the PACE,
right,
milieu from that standpoint, and really had my grounding actually as a clinician,
right,
more in the ambulatory setting. And then as things have progressed, I used to manage the large home health agency in Northern California with an integrated health system.
Okay.
And then moved back into the acute care setting.
Sure.
And have done a variety of things from that standpoint, all from the quality risk aside, but always had care management or case management.
Right.
We use a lot of different terminology,
yeah,
to kind of describe that functionality.
Sure.
And have been doing that actually for the last 15 years. And then in the process of that, once again, reconnecting back along the continuum of care, because the work that I do really is so much more about making sure that people have safe transitions now.
Right.
So we really are back to that roots of connecting back into the community-based levels of care.
Right.
So been very fortunate.
One of the unique things is that you actually got your start in the ambulatory setting. Not very, I wouldn't say not very many, but it's more unique maybe with the people that I've spoken to that actually got their start out in, you know, in the community. Mm-hmm. How do you think that has helped shaped your vision now that you have to work across the whole continuum, both acute and ambulatory and post-acute?
Well, it's interesting. I oftentimes find that we don't really discover anything new. We go back and find out things that we had done in the past.
Right.
So I think the older I get, the more I realize that there had been actually very functional systems in the past, right, that worked very well, and for a variety of reasons as the evolving healthcare system has progressed, we went from fairly significant integration, right, the original care coordination person was actually your primary care physician.
Right.
So they took care of you in the primary care setting. They took care of you in the hospital. They coordinated all the consults that actually occurred while you were in the hospital.
Right.
And then they made sure that you had the right follow-up when you went home.
Right.
And as that model evolved and changed, you know, we became more fragmented, more specialized.
Sure.
It's interesting. So now we're going back to recognizing that we have to actually integrate care across the continuum. And I think the biggest evolution was with the readmission penalty from CMS as part of their values-based process.
Yeah.
Being placed on the hospitals, really forced then hospitals who had been very focused on a very complex environment within a contained structure to think about, oh, what does this mean for our folks to be able to get care and services once we leave the walls of the hospital?
Right.
Have now brought us back to, oh, we have to work with all of those providers that actually right. used to be there. And, you know, the federal government has been very effective in trying to figure out how to control costs.
Yeah.
And every time they try to control costs in one segment of the continuum, it usually results in growth in another segment yeah. of the continuum, which then they go down and say, oh, I need to contain the cost in that part. And so it's interesting as they've gone along and essentially put some kind of episodic payment structure in, we've seen, you know, the growth in certain segments. So it's ironic now that the growth in actually home care services versus home health
right.
has actually increased. So it's interesting to watch. That's where I originally started.
Yeah.
To see where that's come back to the value of keeping people in their own home yeah. from a quality and a cost-effective standpoint.
Absolutely. And in another ironic twist, also how to re-engage the primary care physicians, whereas they used to be the kind of care coordinators themselves. So, yeah.
I think I found over time, Zach, that people do what you reward them for.
Sure.
And people want to do the right thing, but they're also going to then gravitate towards those things that they get rewarded for. And in our system, monetary reward is certainly there. So right. as we create our models of reimbursement, that drives people's behavior.
Absolutely.
People will always want to do the right thing from a quality standpoint. It can be difficult at times if you're not being rewarded to be able to do that.
Yeah. So besides your background in ambulatory care, what is something else that people might not know about you?
Oh, that's a great question. So in my quest after becoming a nurse and realizing I think a lot of the struggles in the healthcare system, and really the people that work within the healthcare delivery system are some of the hardest working people
Agreed.
On the planet.
Agreed.
I think their integrity and their intentions to do the right thing are really strong. And it gets to be a very frustrating experience oftentimes because there appears to be multiple barriers in order to achieve what you want to have done.
Sure.
And I think it's easy for people to get frustrated in that process and burned out in that process. So I actually took a foray into becoming an oyster rancher.
Wow.
So I actually had a business where we were actually raising oysters.
Is that right?
For sale.
Where was that?
It was up in Humboldt County.
Okay.
Up on Humboldt Bay, one of the few places on the West Coast that you could still
wow.
grow oysters. And it was a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
So it was very concrete. It was very rewarding.
Yeah.
Your frustrations were mostly of the nature making
Absolutely.
Versus the human making. And it was a really great time and experience that I learned a lot about business in doing that,
sure.
along with just the wonderful experience of trying to figure out how to create an oyster from a little tiny thing into something
yeah.
that somebody would actually purchase to eat.
Well, plus you got to eat some deliciously fresh oysters, I would imagine. So.
Ironically, I was delighted that people like to eat oysters. Personally, I never found them to be appealing. But the whole process of growing something and then being able to sell it was a wonderful thing. And the working environment out on Humboldt Bay was absolutely spectacular.
Right, right. Well, and now you're back into healthcare. So there you go. So you are obviously a major part of Sutter Health's care coordination and care management. Tell us first a little bit about Sutter Health.
So Sutter Health is a fairly large integrated health system in Northern California. We serve primarily the San Francisco Bay Area and then down through the I-80 corridor down into the valley. We have other connectivities in other parts of the state, but that's our primary base.
Right.
Started off as a hospital system and then have been then moving into being integrated, having that we have physician practices via a medical foundation
sure.
model, and then all into ambulatory care type centers from that standpoint.
Yeah.
And most recently entered into the world of having our own health plan.
Right.
That started about 3 years ago. So we're on that journey of becoming what we consider to be a fully integrated healthcare delivery system.
Have a lot of those changes. I know you said that the health plan was within the last 3 years, but have a lot of those changes in growth been spurred by the recent changes in just kind of the healthcare field? Because actually I heard a statistic the other day that the big eight hospital systems or health systems in California at this point represent 40% of all of the actual hospitals in California. And so, you know, just because everybody's kind of growing and growing and kind of pulling other locations in. So is that always something that Sutter's been growing and growing, or has it been more recent?
I think that Sutter has been very thoughtful and strategic in the organizational development to make sure that the actions that we take are completely connected with our mission and values.
Sure.
And then everybody's trying to respond to the changes in the marketplace.
Right.
And that's the only way to be able to be successful. And if you're going to carry out your mission, you have to respond to those changes in marketplace. And so that movement towards integration.
Right.
Right. So that you can actually provide for people across the continuum of care. And then really the connectivity, which is always a challenge in the California marketplace to have physicians integrated into that model because of the restrictions around the corporate practice of medicine.
Right.
But the idea of being able to provide for that continuum, and not just to do it ourselves, but I think a movement to partner with organizations that have like values.
Right.
And that would be better at doing something that we would do, but we need to have that, and we're connecting with them.
Yeah.
And in healthcare right now, I think I call it, we're in the land of the dinosaurs, not meaning from extinction. The fact is that for systems to be successful now, you have to be at a certain scale.
Yep.
Just because of the way the reimbursement mechanisms exactly. are going from that standpoint, and I think we're the federal government. So I think you're seeing a lot of consolidations.
Yeah.
Not of them are always done strategically.
Right.
I think they're all done with what people believe is the right intention to do that. But yeah. We will see more and more of that as time goes on. So we will have less and less numbers of organizations serving a larger segments of the population.
Yeah, and even less independent hospitals, more than likely, as it moves forward. You can already kind of see that slow decline, the independent going into kind of the bigger systems as it is.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think it's very difficult unless you have a specialty niche.
Right.
Or in a very unique type community, is it even possible to be standalone anymore? You're even watching the academic institutions form alliances,
yeah.
expand outward into a more integrated delivery system. You know, I think where we struggle in our country is the rural areas are the canaries in the coal mine.
Yeah.
As to use the old analogy of how those delivery systems in the rural areas are faring is a good example of the challenges that we're having now.
Sure.
So
it is an exciting time, though, to be in healthcare. So I want to hear a little bit about some of those, some more of your thoughts on that and some of the things that you're doing. But first, can you tell us a little bit about your role within Sutter Health? So what you oversee and kind of what your role is?
Right. So I'm really fortunate. I have a very interesting and challenging role
right.
for Sutter. And I have a counterpart that does the same thing that I do in the Bay Area.
Sure.
So Sutter's has two essentially operating units now. And the joy of my role is to actually coordinate care across the continuum for some specific functions. So care management meaning is that I have responsibility for both in the acute care setting and then in the ambulatory setting, primarily the physician practices,
right.
but also the post-acute care, which is a partnership development with skilled nursing facilities, residential care facilities, to do case management, social services, and palliative care.
Right.
So we're the parts that are trying to make sure that a care plan gets developed and then those resources that somebody needs actually is able to be transferred across the levels of care so that for the patient's experience, that that feels like a relatively seamless experience and that they're going to get the quality that they're able, that they deserve to have.
Right. And in the Valley area here, I remember you had told me before when we had spoken, you oversee a certain number of acute hospitals and your network involves so many skilled nursing facilities. What's the kind of scale of what you oversee?
Yeah, so the scale I think sometimes is exciting.
Besides large.
And challenging at the same time. We have 12 acute care hospitals in my area of responsibility. And then two very large medical foundations.
Sure.
That translates into some kind of enormous numbers when you look at the number of beds that are actually there, the number of patients that we actually serve, the number of physicians that we actually are in partnership with. Our post-acute network, which is really probably one of the most exciting developments that we've been able to do, about 3.5 years ago in my area, the organization decided to divest itself of its last skilled nursing facility.
Okay.
And we recognized at that point in time that we needed to actually create partnerships with providers that could fill that really important element of the continuum,
yeah,
which was the post-acute care. So currently, we have contracts via our managed care patients with about 40 skilled nursing facilities within the Valley area. So that's, for those of you that are familiar with California, it's the I-80 corridor from essentially the Bay to the Sierras, and then from I-5 down to about Los Banos.
Right.
And so during that time, we discharge approximately 7,000 patients into skilled nursing
Wow.
facilities per year. Our hospitals discharge over 20,000, you know,
Yeah.
acute inpatients a year. So, and then our physician practices serve an enormous number of population from that standpoint.
Sure.
So it's fun to work on that level of scale, feel like we have the ability to really impact the people in our community.
Right.
And the work that we do actually has a really, I think, important impact on what their healthcare delivery is like.
Absolutely. And it's very big picture. So yeah. when you divested of your own skilled nursing facilities and then just went strictly into partnerships with organizations that you could trust, one thing that I think gets thrown around maybe cavalierly at this point, I don't know if that's a word either, but I'm just going to keep going like it is the term narrowing networks, especially with skilled nursing and those post-acute providers. So without driving too far off topic, was that something that you were aware of? Did you narrow the networks of the skilled nursing facilities that you would work with? And what did you require of those people that were going to be your partners?
Yeah, so it's interesting. With all of sometimes, especially a couple of decades back, how managed care had received not such necessarily a good reviews for what they did, the ability under a concept of a managed care network to be able to deliver care to people that was of high quality and of affordable cost meant that you needed to actually partner with providers that were going to have what I believe first is your same values and mission, which includes being committed to quality right. and efficiency. And so when you create a narrow network, what you're really saying is I want to work with a certain group of providers that are going to be focused in on quality and efficiency and be aligned with us.
Sure.
And so that's what we did. We used our managed care contracting as a basis to initiate the conversations. But the conversations include all of the patients that we serve as a healthcare delivery system. We try not to look at a payer source. We try to deliver care based upon what your clinical need is.
Sure.
And Most clinicians, I will tell you, are payer agnostic. They probably don't even know who your payer is, right? So we really wanted to create an infrastructure and a system that was really blind to payers. We always have to pay attention to that. There's no way to get around that. But you wanted to develop it based upon who was going to deliver high-quality care. And I think most importantly was those that were willing to be honest and transparent.
Right.
Which I think is the key to any kind of partnership, is to be able to be willing to share openly and be willing to look at how you can improve processes based upon that open dialogue, which is way easier said than done, especially when we have a highly competitive environment. So everybody in our skilled nursing network, almost everybody in it is a competitor.
Right.
Now, we have some systems within that.
Right.
But the reality is, we recognize that a rising tide floats all ships.
Right.
So that if we are able to work with everybody to raise the quality of care and to improve how we coordinate it, everybody prospers in that.
Yeah.
And our belief is there's enough demand in this environment that everybody can essentially still stay successful.
Right.
So that's what we have. So that's how we've created the network. And I think that's been something unique that people have felt working with us, is that we really have approached it as a partnership,
yeah.
Which means we really do want to do better. So we, as the acute care side, certainly make our own mistakes. And the idea is really, I think one of the biggest challenges, which is maybe a gentle segue here, I also have the honor of being able to sit on the California Hospital Association's post-acute care advisory board.
Yeah.
And we were just discussing the other day some of the challenges that are coming down. You know, the federal government's always doing payment changes from that standpoint. But we have a population now that is significantly more challenged in a number of ways. Financial resources, social support, behavioral health challenges,
right.
And really trying to safely manage this population across the continuum is an enormous issue for everybody right now.
Yeah.
And so we couldn't be successful at trying to help manage that population if we didn't create those kind of partnerships.
Absolutely.
Where we would actually be able to really work collaboratively with really difficult challenges.
Yeah.
Because I think in the old days, people could try to just push your problem onto someone else. Well, that doesn't work anymore because there isn't enough room to keep pushing your problems out of the way.
Yeah.
So now we have to work really collaboratively and creatively. And one of the things in healthcare that's difficult is the regulatory environment is not conducive to innovation or creativity. So trying to innovate and create to deal with challenges constrained by the regulatory environment really requires the ability to have honest communication and try to figure out how we can meet the needs of people that are often have very difficult needs to meet.
Right. And I actually want to touch on that or dive into the community case management idea that you've integrated, but just so that the listeners can know, can you give us kind of a brief breakdown? We talk about the continuum of care. In your scope of you know, what you oversee in a patient episode, just briefly, you know, inpatient case management, social work, you know, heading to ambulatory care, post-acute, and then getting into the community case management. What does that look like? What are each of those, how do they play into an episode of care?
So we utilize what we consider as a model of care. And that model is a team-based model. So for care coordination, we use an RN in a case management role. We use licensed clinical social workers because we realize the complexity of the psycho-emotional issues that our patients have these days requires that. We use a non-licensed role. So we, depending on which setting it is, it can either be an assistant or a coordinator.
Okay.
And then we've just most recently added pharmacy to the team.
Interesting.
So that's the model. So that team will work together to manage a certain number of people across the continuum of care. So in the acute care setting, a team that we don't have pharmacy as much in there manages that population.
Right.
And then we try to, the big thing now is really, we don't use the term discharge planning anymore.
Okay.
We call it transition of care planning.
Right.
Because it says that we have the responsibility now to make sure that that transition is actually complete.
Yeah.
And works well, so that our responsibilities never end at one set of walls. We are doing that.
Right.
So that groups are always transitioning those patients to the next level of care. So in the ambulatory setting, for a certain patient population, we have case management teams within our primary care physician practices that actually help with the transition as somebody comes from the acute care setting into the skilled nursing setting. We work with our home health agency and they come back into the physician practices, because ultimately more people spend time in their primary care practice.
Exactly.
Versus than they'll ever spend time in a hospital.
Right.
So our teams, so that model of team-based care is always trying to make sure that we're coordinating the care and services, that it's clearly communicated across each level of care. We work with those providers to be able to manage that back into the ambulatory.
Yeah.
Which leads us to what you were asking about our community case management.
Yep.
So what we recognize that about 99% of the time, people deal with their healthcare by themselves.
Yeah.
Very small is the amount of time they actually are in the delivery system.
Yeah.
Right? And the time they're actually in the delivery system is even shorter, right? So the recognition is that a lot of things that have to do with keeping somebody within the community and healthy is not necessarily connected to the traditional delivery system.
Exactly.
And everybody's discerned it. Everybody now knows about the social determinants of health.
Yeah. Well, before you go through there, what are some of, just for people that might not know, like, right. What are some of the main social issues, just from a big picture level? Like, what are some of the main things that you're trying to deal with, or that your community case managers are dealing with?
So I think all of our case managers primarily deal with two categories of challenges. More and more people have some form of behavioral health challenge.
Right.
And people are familiar with kind of what's the traditional mental health issues, what we diagnostically call axis one deviations, schizophrenia, bipolarness, that type of thing.
Right.
So respond to medications. The vast majority of people fall into what they call axis two, which is really more subtle type of challenges, the classic personality disorders, right? Often that originated from childhood experiences and those types of things, so that now those are challenging for people as adults, right? So trying to deal with people that have those, that behavioral health, that's why versus mental illness, behavioral health challenges.
Right.
And so those are the categories. And all of us have a level of either comfort or competency around dealing with behavioral health, right? And all of us have challenges within our family units to kind of relate to that.
Absolutely.
So that, I think, is much different than it used to be, just from the volume of people that appear to have those challenges now.
Yeah.
The second is, and we're well aware of this, but the discrepancy in income in our country, people's resources, both financial and social, are pretty stretched.
Absolutely, yeah.
So the family unit in our country is not nearly what it used to be. And the commitment, I think, and ability for families to care for people as they go through the aging process is severely taxed.
Yeah.
So we deal a lot with trying to figure out people's lack of resources from a social and financial, and then their behavioral health problems. And then add medical complexity, because as we keep people alive longer, the rise of chronic illnesses means there's a certain level of medical complexity. So those are the three main things that we look at. And then associated with that is, unfortunately, what you have access to for services is based upon your financial resources.
Of course.
Or your payer source. So we always have to look at all four of those things to try to figure out how are we going to be able to help keep people safe across the continuum.
I heard a really striking statistic the other day about, you know, if you went to two separate areas in even Los Angeles County, one of, you know, very high means or affluence to some of the less privileged communities, and the average life expectancy can vary by like a decade. And that really is access to healthy food and access to medical resources and or even just education about those things. And so I think that that is a really interesting concept. Or even the other thing they had talked about was housing. And I know you have a program actually that you are partnering with some residential facilities, correct?
Yeah. So let me, a couple of things before I get into that partnership.
Yeah.
For those of the folks on the podcast who have never done it before, go onto the website with the California Health Rankings by County.
Okay.
And it does a wonderful job of associating essentially the social determinants of health with morbidity and mortality by county.
Interesting. Okay.
It's fascinating, although nobody should be surprised by it.
Right.
But clearly the higher socioeconomic counties have much lower mortality and morbidity.
Yeah.
So it's very clear that socioeconomic status along with environmental factors have a significantly larger impact on people's health than the delivery system.
Yeah.
And that's what we're faced with now, trying to do that. And interesting, over the last decade or so, how we've shrunken government in some ways, as far as programs and some of that type of stuff. And some of those issues that people are faced with, they get magnified because they end up in the delivery system. There's only two groups in our country that can't say no. That's the police and an emergency department.
Right.
So we have to deal with whatever comes our way.
Right.
So we're dealing with that now. So it's a fascinating thing. Go look at that. It's very clear, and it shows the direct correlation. It shows the percentages of what influencing factor. The delivery system's about 20%. Right. Yeah. So 80% of people's health is determined by their behaviors, their environment, your genetics, those kind of things. So as I was talking about our continuum of care, I talked about acute and post-acute and our ambulatory with our physicians. We recognized that 99% of the time people were actually by themselves.
Yeah.
And oftentimes that's when they failed.
Sure.
So we began to recognize that there is a need to actually extend. People do better if their care is coordinated. And it's not necessarily about the medical part. It's like, do you know how to get through the system, or do you know how to get access to resources?
Yeah.
So we've started community case management programs, and they look in a variety of different ways. Oftentimes they're partnerships with community organizations that actually already do great work. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes with federally qualified health clinics that actually have been focused in that arena.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's with private parties that we've worked with that can actually just assist with. But it's all designed to have a longer term relationship with the patient, and specifically about trying to make sure that they get some kind of stabilization back into the community.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, homelessness, and, you know, homelessness is not about the fact that you live on the street. If you just don't have a stable place to live.
Yeah.
It's fairly hard for people, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you're not knowing where you're going to live, right, if you don't have anybody that loves and cares about you, it's really kind of hard to manage your diabetes.
Absolutely.
Right? And so
it's not high on the priority list, right?
Yeah, because of what you're doing. So we have created partnerships and programs where we're working with various groups around that to help extend the continuum of care. Primarily, we do that through as being a not-for-profit health system. We have a responsibility and an honor to provide benefit back into the community that we serve. It's one of the wonderful things about working for a not-for-profit is you get to do things like that to look at where the needs are and try to serve them. So we do that as part of our community benefit outreach and dollars, and we're being very thoughtful about who needs what kind of help and how we can be effective in being able to do that. Once again, we often partner with other groups that know how to do it.
Yeah.
Right. And work with them in a coordinated fashion to make sure that we can help extend that outreach.
Yeah. And I think that kind of goes back to what you were saying. And something that I think we're starting to hear more often in general about no longer looking at some of these things as an episode of care. It is healthcare in the long run for a lot of these people that need it, or even for people that aren't, you know, homeless or things like that. But good long-term healthcare isn't necessarily from the time that you're in the hospital and something's already wrong, you know, for the next 90 days. So
some would say, and sometimes we try to look at this, that when you end up in the hospital, we probably could consider that, depending on what type of reason you're in the hospital for, a failure of the delivery system to have kept you healthy.
Right.
And it's not just the delivery system, it's the entire community.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the focus of community, because you have to have healthy communities in order to have healthy people.
Yeah.
And oftentimes the end result is a hospitalization based upon factors and needs that weren't able to be met.
Yeah.
While somebody was in the community. So you had talked to me earlier about this concept of upstream.
Yep.
So very popular. And once again, I have to laugh because I've been doing this a long time.
Right.
It's pretty easy. I mean, so public health in our country got started to try to take care of people, right?
Yeah.
And keep them healthy.
Right.
So when you have a population-based management system versus a reward you for treating diseases, we can do other things for people. So
yeah.
Public health for a long time, you know, the greatest advances in morbidity and mortality was because we figured out how to deliver clean water and, you know, get rid of poo.
Yeah.
Right? So when you think about
absolutely.
It, really,
yeah.
Which that's not much about a delivery system, right? Now, we've made advances since that time, but I mean, so back to the basics, right? Really makes a big difference. And so that's what we're trying to do, is we look at where can we intervene with people. So, you know, our primary care practices are an enormous focus in Sutter Health right now, because we realize that that's a place as a delivery system we can interface with the populace to help keep them healthy.
Right.
I mean, a primary care doctor is trying to do those things with you that look at you holistically.
Yeah.
As a complete individual, not just a medical condition, and to try to address those things that will keep you from getting ill. So,
right.
You know, the work. So, I mean, a primary care doc is upstream.
Right.
Right. Further upstream would be, well, then let's go look at what happens when you go home.
Right.
Right. You know, and then the end result is trying to hospitals are terrific places. We do terrific work. We just want to make sure people are there when they really need to be there.
Yeah.
And I think as a society, that's what we're trying to do. At Sutter, we have a saying which helps guide all of our work. The right care at the right time in the right place. And that's what we're constantly trying to think about doing. Are we giving people the right care at the right time and the right place? And if we try to do that, that moves you all around the stream, right?
Right. And I think that's a really interesting concept, especially with some of the other ideas that we've talked about the way that healthcare is changing. Because on one hand, hospital length of stays are going down, and they're expected to keep the length of stay shorter, but they're also in a way becoming insurance companies or having to, you know, make their own, you know, whether it's managed care or health systems there. But they also can't be successful without volume. So they're acquiring other places, and it's an interesting move towards that upstream or pre-acute, I've heard it called too, for hospitals, now that they really are responsible for that whole person health, to make that shift upstream. And I guess, like you said, it's cyclical. It's kind of coming back to that point, I guess.
Well, I think that also goes back to my original statement about people do what they get rewarded for. And so the reimbursement structure in our country drives a lot of behavior.
Right.
All right. And so people are going to do those things meaning that if preventative activities are something you get rewarded for, you're more likely to promote those. Whereas if management of a disease process is what you actually get reimbursed for, then you're going to spend time on that. That's why the struggle for the traditional providers has always been based upon who pays you, right?
Right.
Because you do what they reward you for. So ultimately, in our country, it's a reimbursement system. So the payers have an enormous influence on this. And what's the largest payer in our country? The federal government.
Right.
So how the federal government chooses to go about rewarding people for doing things within this spectrum of care, people will do that. And I think that's what the federal government's trying to do now, is to shift. And I will, as much as Obamacare has heard criticisms, there's been a lot of innovation and a lot of attempt to reward people to do the right thing. So, for example, primary care physicians now can get reimbursed to help do a transition of care when somebody moves from one level of care to the next. There's actually reimbursement for that.
Yeah.
Never was before.
Right.
So we're being able to do that more. There's actually reimbursement to do management on a long-term basis for that. The advanced care planning discussions started in January, that you can get paid to have the time to have those conversations.
Yep.
About people like, what do you want?
Right.
You know, because right. The delivery system's confusing, and you need an interpreter to explain to you actually what does all this mean.
Right.
What we see on a TV show is not reality.
Yeah.
And so there's good things that are starting to happen, that when we reward people for doing things, they will actually do them. And so I'm greatly encouraged by that. They're starting to finally be some rewarding for that. You know, delivery systems like Kaiser can do different things because Kaiser's a health plan.
Right.
And they're not completely dependent upon doing things as a provider.
Exactly.
They're supposed to take care of people. So, you know, more... So it depends on what your payer structure looks like, is helps drive the behaviors.
Yeah. Even things like another thing that I heard recently is starting to add codes so that doctors can bill for like time making phone calls to patients, or yeah. doing things. It doesn't have to be a visit in the office right there that day, or even some of the kind of archaic things about not being able to bill for, you know, in an FQHC, not being able to bill for two doctor visits in the same day. So, you know, somebody that took a bus for 2 hours and saw a doctor but has to see a specialist has to come back another day, or they can't bill. So those kinds of things are encouraging as we're moving forward.
Yeah. Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how that's happening to you, change is usually slow or rapid.
Right.
but mostly you would rather be in control of it.
Yeah.
So we are moving, and actually probably we're moving more rapidly in healthcare than ever before, based upon a lot of financial drivers, right?
Yeah.
You know, we can't continue to have healthcare rise at the cost that it has been at the rate from a country standpoint. We can't afford to have that happen. So as we try to change that reimbursement structure into trying to be able to keep people healthy, that's a difficult transition, but it's one that we have to achieve, or all of us, and looking across the chat, who's a little bit younger than I am, we can't afford to be able
right.
to do that. You can't keep that rate of growth because we can't, from an economic standpoint. So
yeah.
My belief is actually if you take care of people and keep them healthy, you can drive the cost of healthcare down.
Absolutely.
But we have to change the reimbursement system to be able to make that.
Absolutely. Well, hey, Tori, it's been a pleasure again. Thank you so much for coming on and for shedding some light on these things. It's really been a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for coming.
Great. My pleasure.
And once again, this has been Pop Health Podcast. You can find us on our website at pophealthpodcast.com or on the podcast section of iTunes. Thank you.